लाइट कैमरा
रोलिंग
एक्शन।
वेलकम टू माय पॉडकास्ट लेट्स टॉक अबाउट वर्टिकल्स, अ प्लेस वेयर सीक्रेट्स आर स्पिल्ड, स्टोरीज अनफोल्ड एंड द मिस्टीरियस वर्ल्ड ऑफ वर्टिकल्स इज रिवील्ड इन ऑल इट्स ग्लोरी। Behind the scenes? Oh yes. Exclusive insights? Absolutely. Eccentric characters? You bet. So, pull up a chair, pour yourself something suspiciously strong, and prepare for a conversation you didn't know you needed. So, welcome to the podcast Let's Talk About Verticals. And now, let's talk. Hello and welcome to my podcast, Let's Talk About Verticals. Today we are going back from New York and from Australia to the main city of the verticals at the moment. And we are going back to a man. I read a lot about him, about being a pirate in an amusement park, as I read, about being a health manager on set for the film industry, about a member of a stunt show I read, and a lot of other stuff. So I think we have a lot to talk about, but mainly we talk about his vertical stuff because he did also a lot of verticals already. And I'm very happy to have him, and I'm saying hello to Toby Pruitt. Welcome to my podcast, Toby. How are you doing?
Hello, hello. Doing fantastic today, and it's great to be here.
I read your biography and I was really shocked how much jobs you had already in so different spaces. And healthcare, was it healthcare manager? Yeah, it was healthcare manager.
Sort of, yeah. It started years back when I became an EMT. And then flash forward about 10 years later, we have a worldwide pandemic that's going on.
Yeah.
And that's when I reached into the health and safety department.
And what was your job then?
When I first started, I was going to be a COVID compliance officer and just work with the sets. And my first job, I got, I ended up being the department head for a film. And I got into it not realizing that I was going to be the department head. I thought I was just going to be a member of the team. And I show up and I get my call sheet for the next day and realize that my name is at the top of the department right underneath the epidemiologist.
Oh.
And that's how I found out I was the department head. When I talked to production later, they're like, yeah, we didn't really tell you that part.
Okay. Was your payment also as department head or only as a member?
It was.
Okay.
And kind of a funny part about that, when they first pitched it to me, they were like, you know, we're really sorry. It's a low budget film. We're sorry the rate is this low, but this is all we can do right now. And I looked at it and I was like, you know what? I'm not doing anything else because the entire world has shut down. And I value, you know, what this department can do. I value you know, our entertainment industry. I'll do it. Why not? Let's do this. Let's keep people safe. First thing. And let's get the entertainment industry back up. And about the job was so intense that it took me almost 3 weeks to file my first time card because I literally didn't have time.
Mm-hmm.
I was pulling like 18 to 20 hour days, many days, because the film was in trouble, a lot of trouble. And when I filed it and I got my first paycheck, I was like, whoa, something's wrong here. Something is bad wrong. I've been overpaid drastically.
Drastically.
Yeah. I've been overpaid drastically.
I wish that would happen to me. Overpaid drastically.
It is the only time it has happened to me.
okay.
And the funny part was it was for like 6 weeks. And I think it was 5 to 6 weeks. And I said, they've already paid me more than what I was supposed to make for this 5 or 6 weeks. And the production coordinator, who is someone named Kimmy Johnson, just an absolutely incredible professional in the film industry. She looked at me and she's like, no, that's accurate. We just have a whole lot of taxes up here in Massachusetts. I'm like, no, it's too much. I'm paid too much. And she's looking at it, and she looks at me, and she's like, Toby, did you think
Take
that
it.
rate was, yeah, did you think
Take
that
it.
rate was for the whole film? I was like, yeah, I'm a flat rate. That's the whole film, right? She's like, oh, honey, no. That's your rate per week.
You had jackpot. Thank you,
Oh.
pandemic.
Okay. I was stunned, and it's one of the few times I can actually say that I earned every penny of that I know why now they were saying we're sorry it's so low, because that was the hardest, most stressful, most horrible job that I ever did well, and I earned every penny of it.
Yeah, but that then it's even better if it's paid really well. You know what I
Yeah.
mean?
Yeah,
So,
yeah.
So what did you do before this healthcare manager job?
Well, I've always been an actor. I grew up in a radio station. My grandfather was a radio engineer. And he specialized in connecting rural towns to the greater broadcasting networks. So I grew up in a really small town in Western Kentucky. And the radio station that I grew up in was the one that my granddad built. And
Radio
he was on the air
station,
for
that's
years.
cool.
Oh, it was awesome. It was incredible. Like, some of my first words I ever spoke ended up being broadcast. It was incredible. Real small town, though. Really, really, really small town. There's not really a town or anything that we would call a city anywhere nearby. You had to drive 2 hours south just to get to the first city, and that was Memphis. There was a town called Paducah that was about an hour sort of northeast. But yeah, it was farmland,
But
mostly.
that's the best area to grow up. I grew up in a
Yeah.
small village with 600 people.
That's
And
amazing. Yeah, our
that's
town
it.
had about 700. Yep.
And that was it. It was the best. You can be out on the streets every day. Nothing bad happened. It was the best childhood ever.
Yeah, it was safe. It was very safe. But as a result, I think that's part of the reason why I love cities. Because it's you grow up wherever you grow up, you always look, if you got a curious mind, you always want to see what the rest of the world is like.
Yeah, true,
And
true.
so the first city I moved out of high school was New York.
Oh, huh, big change.
I moved to New York. That's where I started my training as an actor, and I fell in love with the city. I absolutely fell in love. And since then, I've said that the only three places that have really felt at home have been New York, London, and Los Angeles.
And when did you move to Los Angeles then? And why?
Yes, 2016 is when I got, actually January 1st of 2016 is when I arrived.
Oh, that's not so long.
Not so long, but I in 2000, the middle of 2018 is when I went out on tour again, and that basically I had a storage unit in LA. But I was on an international tour, and that ran all the way up to the pandemic, 2020. And in 2020, when they shut all live shows down, I was back up in New York at the time, and they flew me to the home base. The home base was in Florida, and that's also where my folks lived at the time. And so I got trapped in Florida during the pandemic.
Have could be more worse to be trapped in Florida.
Yeah.
No, no.
Well, yeah, it's you either love it or you
Hate
endure
it or
it.
love it or what, really?
Yeah. I didn't I wouldn't I wasn't big on yeah. I'm trying
So,
to be nice. I'm trying to be nice. Some of my best friends are there, and just because it wasn't for me doesn't mean it's not for everyone.
yeah.
But I just really wasn't a huge fan.
And LA now because of the acting stuff?
I almost went back to New York, but the film and TV industry is one that I'd sort of played with, but I never really dove into, never really gave it my best effort. And it was a challenge. And I was like, I want the challenge, you know. The other places I've done kind of what I'd hoped to do. So Yeah, let's go take this challenge.
Did you ever do also theater stuff or stuff like
Oh
that?
yeah. Yeah, theater was the majority of what I did.
In New
I was a Class
York
B trained
back?
actor. Yep. I trained at this place called the National Shakespeare Conservatory, and we had we called our sister school the Stella Adler Conservatory, because almost the entire faculty at Adler was the faculty of National Shakes. And we'd exchange students and all like that back then. So that's where I went to school, and I started working the off-Broadway circuit right after that, and just had an incredible time. Oh my God, I miss those days and that time, and going from show to show to show,
To have the
class of
direct
9 o'clock.
feedback of the audience,
Yeah,
to feel the vibe in the theater. I did
I
also some
can.
theater stuff, and that's why I love it, because some days are so different. One day they are laughing, for example, on scene one. Next day they are totally quiet on scene one. They are laughing on scene three, and you think, "Heh, that's not even funny, but okay." So it's never the same, and that's what I like on theater.
Yeah, me too. That instant feedback. You don't have to wait months, or sometimes years at a time for something to come out to find out, if it spoke to an audience. And in some of the types of theater that I've been able to do, you can have direct relationship with not just the audience, but individuals within the audience. And you really get to communicate,
And for me, it was always kind of vibe. When you see the whole theater is full and you take a look behind
Oh
and
yeah.
you see they're all waiting for you and you that's I love that. That's great. It's
Yeah.
kind of special adrenaline kick. I don't know. So when did you shoot your first vertical and how did you get into that one? And big question. Did you already know what a vertical was when you shot your
Nope.
first one?
Didn't, and none of us did. They weren't even called verticals yet. When I auditioned for it was called a mobisode, and that
A
stood for
what?
mobile episode.
A
Mobisode.
mobosode.
Yep, mobile episode. And the first one I shot was in 2023.
Also
And
very early.
and it was the first big one. At least as far as I
Wait,
know, the first big one.
wait. Was you were the bad dad in The Double Life of My Billionaire Husband,
I
wasn't?
was, but that was my second one.
But that was the first vertical I've ever saw that catched me to this space. That was the second one? What was the first one?
First one was the big one. Fated to my forbidden alpha.
First I didn't like the werewolf and vampire stuff, so I spared that and didn't watch it.
Nope. It's honestly, it's a really good one. It still holds up. That was I got on set with Casey Esser, and it was Casey's first vertical as well. And we were actually talking about a few things. When I first auditioned for it, I got the sides. I did the audition. I thought it was like a gang thing, like a Sons of Anarchy, that kind of style.
A gang thing.
Everyone was calling like Alpha this and Alpha that, and even my name was an old Southern name. I was the Alpha Ethel, and I was like, well, okay, that's like an old Southern name. That's
You
a
felt really important, you want to say, on your first one?
yeah. I did. I really did. It was the dialogue was strong. There was like no indication that this was the type of medium that we have now. And so we got on set and they're restaging us and we're like frozen in place, and I'm like, this feels like a black box theater. This doesn't feel, I mean, this is like we just barely move. And they're like, yeah, it's being shot vertical, and all the cameras were sideways and everything. And we're like, I was talking to Casey, I was like, dude, what's going on here? He's like, it's called a mobisode. It's like mobile episode. I'm like you're watching your phone. He goes, yeah, but you don't turn it sideways. You hold it straight up and watch it. And I was like, oh, okay. And prior to that, a few years before I got to LA, I'd worked in Japan for a year, and I'd seen some stuff like that, some vertical content there. I
Okay.
didn't really understand it, but because most people were like so cram packed on the trains, they didn't have room to like turn and do all that. They would just hold their phone up and just watch stuff like that. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. That's interesting. But it was that same conversation that I was having with Casey, where I was like, I'm trying to get a feel on this. I thought this was like a gang thing, Sons of Anarchy, but we're in like these three-piece suits. We're like really well dressed. He goes, yeah. Did you know we're werewolves? I'm sorry, what? Did you know
A
we're
maid?
werewolves?
What? Your fated
Oh.
maid? Okay.
Oh, okay. Good to know. I guess I'm a werewolf.
When I spoke, I did an episode with Kaylin Peluso, and her first role ever was a day playing role in a werewolf one, playing a dead person. And she told
Oh
me she was laying on the ground playing dead, and all the conversations around her were, "You cannot beat me, I'm the alpha, you're the alpha." And she told me after this shooting, she got back to her manager and said, "What the crap was that? They were talking about werewolves and alphas and stuff like that." And then she swore that she won't take any kind of this role for, I think, 6 months, because she found it so creepy talking about this werewolf maided, fated maid stuff. And so she was not so sympathized with werewolf stuff at the beginning. And for me as the audience, I saw it and I sneaked in and I thought, what the heck is that? What kind of fantasy werewolf alpha green eyes stuff? No. And from the beginning, I didn't watch even vampires or werewolf one because I don't know. It was not so real for me to be stupid, but the other verticals also were kind of silly in the other way. But for me, it was no, I will never watch this. And then I don't know what the first werewolf one was I saw, but it really catched me with all this alpha and beta and omega stuff. When you get it, what's the roles in it? Then it's really great. But first, when you don't have any idea what this whole werewolf stuff means, nope.
I think I've thought about this, why Fated took off the way it did. And there's a few things that I identify. I don't know if it's accurate or not, but I identify. One of the things like in well, I don't know if it's worldwide culture, but it's American culture that always kind of got under my skin was this talk about the alpha male, I'm the big bro, the alpha male, and you got these fucking, oh, sorry, you got these
It's fine, you can
loose.
say anything.
I said, you're gonna hear my real opinion here. You get these damn losers that want to brag about being the alpha this and the alpha that, and it's like, whatever, dude. Try being kind. Try being kind every now and then. You want to be the boss and sexy and all like that? Try being kind. That's sexy, but it's kind of a thing. So in Fated, we were alphas, but it wasn't in your face, alpha, 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 alpha. It was mentioned, but it was the story that was the star of that, the plot, the story, what was going on. So whether I was actually a werewolf or not, like my character never transformed, but I stormed into the Alf Alexander's office, and that was Casey, and demanded, him to help me find my daughter or to avenge her. And so it was about that. And it also happened to be that we were alphas. And if you look at that film, I don't know how they wrote it, translated it. I don't know how it came to be, but it was so well written that the story itself was a compelling one. We just also happened to be werewolves. And where I saw many of the companies that try to copy that, they were just copying the superficial stuff. Okay, he's an alpha. We gotta make sure that it's like big, sexy young guy and take his
But
shirt off.
that's a lot of problem in the stories now. I started, as I said, the first one I saw was with Jared Harper, The Double Life of My Billionaire Husband. It catched me by an ad on Facebook. I tried to resist 2 months and then I got weak because I want to know how this story ends. The first stories I saw, because I then got a weekly membership on Reelshort and I watched 4 nights and days all shows that were released till then. And the first stories, even if it's werewolf, vampire, or the typical tropes were better than the stories now. Because at this time, when it starts, there wasn't so much violation in the storylines. There wasn't not typical this raping, kidnapping, miscarriage shit you see now nearly in every vertical. The stories were mostly well written, even if it makes sense with the werewolf stuff or not. But the stories were totally smoothly going from episode one till the end. And not till now is it. You see, the first 10 episodes are so overloaded with every stuff you need in a vertical, then you hit the paywall and then the story flats totally. Because you get attracted the audience to watch it after the paywall, but then sometimes from episode 11 till 60, it's only the big question, maybe in a banquet scene, is he a fraud or not? And that's all. The story
And it
is
just goes
totally
on and on and on.
flat. And the
You
first
stand there yelling at each
stories,
other.
as you said, the first stories were so well written. I really loved to watch the first verticals. Let's say nearly all of them who dropped 2023. Or at the beginning of 2024. But when this all popped up lately, oh, the storylines are so shit.
It's
Mostly.
funny, it Micro Hollywood has gone through a condensed and quicker version of what traditional Hollywood did. Something worked. So it became the race to see who could do the next one. I remember years back, they were talking about the race for the next Camelot movie. And they had like three or four King Arthur movies come out within the course of like 2 years. And most of them really weren't very good. A couple of them got popular because of like certain stars in it, or someone took their shirt off, something like that. But the storylines, it's like they raced through them too quickly because they wanted to beat each other to the punch. And that's Micro Hollywood did the same thing, and they did it quicker because they had AI tools at their disposal that could crank out a script or their version of a script within minutes as opposed to days. And so they knew that they just needed they look for what sold. Well, the violence sold, so let's put more in. And it became gratuitous violence. And the gratuitous violence just nobody cares about. And it's not, it doesn't do anything positive. It's nothing like that. But it's working. It's selling,
Yeah, but then I'm asking you, did you ever shot a vertical for example, candy jar or Wiglu?
I think so. I think I'm
Because
upwards of like
Wiglu
35
or
right
candy
now.
jar, they are not dropping so many stories, new ones like the big ones, like Drama Box, Real Short, stuff like that. And the quality of them are always good in
I'd be
storylines. In producing, also like Drama Pops, for example, the whole produced stuff in Turkey. Always kind of new, refreshing storylines. And
I'd be
that's why I love these apps.
Gotcha. I'm so sorry I kept interrupting.
No
I'd be curious
problem.
to find out if they're doing it in-house, because once this really hit, and like I said, the first few that I did were real short, and their stories were amazing. They were incredible. But just because of the demand, they had to start outsourcing to like different production companies. And some of the production companies were solid. They were good. They cared about story. And some of them just cared about the money. And you can tell that, I well, at least I say this, but you can tell that when you see the breakdown and you see the rates that they're paying, when you know what their budget is. Or when you get on set and you hear about, some budgetary things and you're like, I'm sorry, what? Are you kidding me? All right, you've got the money, so what are you doing? And so they'll crank out stuff that's close but not quite, or crank out schlock that really isn't that good.
Yeah, if you see Real Short, for example, I'm doing with the big ladies monthly recap episode always for the podcast. I speak with the big review ladies about which verticals dropped, which were new, which were crap, and what was the app of the month, and which app was crap of the month. And for example, in our September recap, Real Short dropped a lot of shows in September. You cannot watch all of them. And the quality was really bad. They put a lot of shows out, but the quality was really bad. And that's why we prefer, for example, the smaller apps like Viglu, Candy Jar. Viglu always have stories based on books. That's really great because if the books are doing well, you can assume that the story is also good. And for example, all the shows filmed in Turkey, mostly released on Drama Pops. They have a bigger crew shooting it. I spoke, for example, with Danny Farber, who lately shot also in Turkey. I asked him what's the difference than shooting in LA, for example, as a director. And he said the teams are bigger and they put more effort in the filming. So, how many verticals have you done so far?
I'm over 30 at this point, but I'm not sure exactly how many because I've literally lost a couple of them. Like they were last minute I came in to help out. And I've got the paperwork. I'm pretty good about keeping all the paperwork, but some of them I just lost count.
Yeah,
But
okay,
I'm
let's
also
say more about
30, 35.
30. When you are now thinking back to your first shooting and to your latest shooting, what has changed?
Everything. When I first started, I did about four or five right off the bat in 23. And then I took an artistic management job of a theater, and I didn't do another vertical for almost a year and a half.
Oh, okay.
And in that time is when the industry just exploded.
Yeah.
When I was coming to the end of that job, I was kind of looking around like, hey, maybe I'll check out these verticals again because I really enjoyed them. You know, they were good stories. I really enjoyed them. It was, you know, at first it was novel, but then I was like, no, this is a valid storytelling
Yeah.
platform. This is, you know, where we're going. And I realized I was like, oh my God, this is an entire industry now. You know, it's and I went to jump back in. Challenge was back then when we first started. You know, a few people in the industry knew me. I still got some great friends and such. But a year and a half passed, and now nobody knew me until they connected me to like Faded to My Forbidden Alpha, the Billionaire Husband, and there was two others that I did that were on the Real Short platform that were pretty popular. Until they connected that I was that guy, then
Okay.
I was just nobody. So I kind of had to start all over again. And I'm not going to lie, I'll be honest with everyone. It's been a struggle. It has been a real struggle to come back because the market at that point had already gotten saturated. And they had, God, I know how I want to say this, but I don't want to speak disparagingly on folks. They'd sort of decided that my type wasn't what people wanted. So I was shuffled off to the, you know, only one day or a couple of days on set. And I ended up playing because I'm not 20 something. You know, that's
Yeah.
pretty obvious. I'm not 20 something.
Yeah.
That's pretty obvious.
I bet you're 30. Okay.
But I also found out that I was playing roles that were a lot older than me. Oh my God. Not long ago, I had a line come out about having a great grandchild, and I'm like, it's not even possible. I mean,
I
maybe, but
recorded an episode with Karen Smolinski, and she told me she had to play a 78-year-old great grandma also.
I was working with Faith Orta, and I think the absolute world of Faith. She is so good. She is
She
so
was your great
professional.
grandchild? Faith Orta was your
She
great.
wasn't my great grandchild, but she was telling me about that she did one that was supposed to be
Okay.
a time jump or an age gap,
Yes.
and so she was supposed to be like in her 40s or 50s, and she was excited about it because she's like, you know, because Faith's a really good actor, and she's like, I'm excited about this, and went in and they just put like a couple of small crow lines on her, and
Yeah.
she's like, wait, no, this is the scene where I'm like, this is where I'm the oldest, and they're like, yes, like do the
Come
makeup.
on.
And they're like, oh no, you need to be young and pretty.
What?
But I'm wait, what? Just yeah, you gotta be young and pretty.
That's a small details that are sometimes missing in verticals.
It's I understand it's the market. They're you know, I relate these a lot to like the romance novels that had Fabio on the cover and all like that,
Yeah.
And a lot of the market is very youth centric. But in doing so, there's for those of us that are say in my age category and have some I refer to it as seasoned actors that have some work under our belts. What we're able to bring or what we're capable of bringing, I think the market needs and wants, but convincing them that it's okay to put me into a leading role or something larger or to put some more meat into it,
Yeah, but
it's
then it's also silly if you see some verticals where, for example, Keira Wisely is the lead and she should have an already 12-year-old son.
Where anatomically it's not quite possible.
Not even nearly. No, you know, that's sometimes really stupid. That they are choosing really young leads, which don't even look like they are 13. You know what I mean? They look like a high schooler and they should already have a 12-year-old son.
I don't want to take work away and I don't want to disparage them. I'm like, good for you guys. Awesome. I'm so happy you guys got work.
Yes, yes.
But it would be nice to spread some of the love,
Yeah, but I think the problem is, as you said, you know, mostly they need some young, hot male lead with fantastic gaps, and so that the women, which are nearly most of the audience, gets what they want to see. That's
It's
it.
funny. I was talking to someone else on set, and they had done a survey. They were like, one of the surveys they had done, they'd asked, they said that most of the American audience were middle-aged women. And the biggest thing they said is they wanted more representation. And I'm like, yes, absolutely. More representation, more people that look like them. And they're like, okay, and that for the men as well. Oh, no. I'm sorry, what? No.
No need.
Okay. There we go. Yay.
Yeah, but that's kind of a tricky one, you know? For me, for example, but that's also, let me tell you this. I, for example, cannot watch the Chinese verticals on RealShort, for example, because for me, it's really exhausting to listen to the Chinese language and watch it with the English subtitles. But the mainly reason why I cannot watch it is if you see this hot billionaire CEO stuff and you have a Chinese one, I'm 5'10". Yeah? And the Chinese people are always so thin, skinny, and small. I cannot believe being protected by a Chinese CEO billionaire. It's more reasonable if a Cayman Cardiff will do it, you know? For example, or a Casey Esser, or I don't know. Because they are not so si thin, skinny, and stuff like that. So that's the same reason I cannot watch the Chinese verticals, because for me, the lead doesn't fit to watch.
It's like a cultural perception.
Yes, it doesn't fit. And that's the reason also why I say, okay, I understand it. When we need attractive men as a lead to watch a vertical, not to
What are you
see
saying?
every time the. Yeah, why not?
What are you saying?
You want to do also the towel drop?
Oh, sure. Yeah. You ready for that?
I asked every male actor, the younger one. I already recorded with Casey, and I said, Casey, listen, how many verticals did you do? And he said, yeah, around about 49. And I said, okay, and how often did you propose, and how often did you have a towel drop? And he said, he proposed 47 times.
Yep, I was there for one of them.
And towel drops a lot. And I said, oh, come on. Didn't it bother you to do it over and over again?
If the story is good, no, it doesn't bother at all. But the story needs to be good. If it's just gratuitous, it's like whatever. As you can probably guess, like I said, I'm not the youthful spry that I used to be, but
Maybe you should take your beard off, maybe.
I did that for one or two, and then they always asked me to grow it back in.
Okay.
And it's funny because I've had like it's been like salt and pepper for years, like even
Okay.
when I was a youth. My beard used to call it going kind of reddish, so a lot of that looked like, so it ages me up. But what's funny is I spent a lot of my career not only in theater but as a stunt professional
Yeah.
and in live action shows. So the joke that I had on set was like, actually, I'm not that bad looking without my shirt. It's just nobody believes it. So they always like dump me up. I'm using three piece suits and other stuff, so I look all frumpy. And I'm like, oh, guys, you have no idea how long I'm spending in the gym here. I actually don't mind, but and you don't want to. Oh, okay, whatever.
A try, please.
Yeah, just to give it a shot. The one that I did with Ashley Belote, and this is actually one I'm really proud of.
What was the
The
title? Is it already
it
released?
was
Yeah.
yes, Forbidden Love with the Young CEO. I think the world of Ashley. Ashley, once again, is probably one of the top actors in the vertical world. And not just the vertical world, but she is complete pro. Just amazing person. Amazing person.
But that's the
When
same, sorry for interrupting, but that's the same shit. She has to play Hayley Lorelei's mother,
Yes.
and they give her two gray stripes, and that was it. And she should be Hayley Lorelei's mother. That
Yeah,
was
we
in
do.
our monthly recap, the vertical, the crap vertical of the month, because it was so bad casted. Why
Yeah, we talked about that.
do they cast a woman in her age for this role? There are so many great older male, female actresses. I don't understand it.
Until these like surveys come out and they hear it, they won't do it because what has sold is youth. Youth, period. You can put youth in anything as long as it's youth. That's the formula. And the thing is, some of these young actors are phenomenal. They're fantastic. And
Without
I'm so happy
asking,
for
yeah.
them. But also, and I've talked to many of them, they're like, yeah, I shouldn't be playing this. This is, but it's paying my rent, so what
Yeah.
do you do?
What were Ashley when you thought you spoke with Ashley about this role? What were her thoughts about playing Harry Hayley Lorelei's mother?
We were joking about it. We were laughing about it because she I consider her a very good friend,
Yeah.
and she knows that I've kind of been stressed out a little bit about like I just can't get them to change their concept of me in casting, because the machine is much bigger than I am.
Yes, absolutely.
The machine's bigger than I am. I mean, and let's be honest. There's a few folks, few names out there of guys and girls that are just wonderful actors, that are wonderful humans, that are your vertical stars. They're the Casey Essers, the Richard
Yeah.
Serras.
Noah
Recently, I worked with,
Fonley.
yeah, I worked with Eric Lutz recently, and my God, what an incredible human that was! An incredible person, incredible actor. And you've got, I mean, I'm embarrassed. There's not as many of the females that I recognize by name because,
Kirby Elwood is a big one. Keira
yeah.
Wisely, Mariah Moss, all
I worked
them.
with Kirby once. I'm sorry, I just blanked on all my names.
Fine. I'm always blanking on the titles. It's fine.
Faith, Laura Faye Smith. And Laura Faye Smith is not one of the younger actors, but she's one of the better actors out there, period. Just a dream to work with. Ashley, I'm losing all my names. Haley, Cassie, who I just recently worked with, both Haley and Cassie, for a day on film. They're wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. But they've all acknowledged that, yeah, there are older actors that should be given meatier roles.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying replace the leads. I'm saying
No.
meatier roles,
More supportive roles, bigger supportive
Yeah.
roles.
But with that, then we get into another talk discussion, which I'm sure we'll hit soon, is the pay disparity. For one, the pay disparity between men to women is horrible. It's
Yeah,
just
I
awful.
heard a lot about it. And I heard also, for example, when I spoke to Karen Smolinski, she lives in Vancouver, she told me she has totally the shit part in payrolls because she's older than 50. She's a female one, and she's from Vancouver. When they are flying over the actors and actresses from the US, they get paid better. They get paid better if, when they are lower than 50 years and if they are male one. And so she said she hit all the three pay
Categories.
gaps lines, and that's really shitty.
I hit two of the three. I'm male, but the way that I've had to fight for my rate, and my rate is low. I'm gonna be honest. I'm a cheap date. I am a cheap date, and I have been told outright that I wasn't worth it.
Really?
I've been told outright that I wasn't worth it.
Why you haven't been worth it in their eyes?
Because I wasn't, in that category that they pay the high rate to. The thing that my big thing is the industry works a very specific way, and it has for years. And it's some of the ways the industry works is good. Some of the ways do need improvement. But when these came over, they were non-union, of course. And I'm good. I never joined Screen Actors Guild, but there's a very specific reason for that, and it's not a bad reason either. It just literally had to do with location. I am a union actor in that I'm Actors Equity. That's the stage union, and I've been Actors Equity for half my life now. But I went union in New York when I was in my early 20s, and it was the right thing to do then. But anyway, long story longer. Whenever you hire an actor, there's a few additional fees that are picked up by production. One is if you're represented, an agency fee, and you'll see it in your listings. This is the rate plus agency fee, and it can range anywhere from 10 to 20%. For these bigger projects, are usually 20%, but for the smaller projects, like 300,000 and less, it's oftentimes just 10%. Well, agency fees are never supposed to come out of the actor, ever, ever, ever. But what they did is they will list the rate and say agency fee included. No, it's not. That means you do not value your acting, you do not value the industry enough to play by some simple rules. Agency fees are charged to production, but that's because your agent, your manager, they make sure that the product that the client has bought is up to its highest skill level, the most prepared. They take care of all the stuff that would degrade the quality of what they're able to bring to you on set so that they can focus just on what you've paid for. So whenever I run across something that says, I let my manager take care of it, and they'll ask for their agency fee. I was very specifically, I was hired for one. Hired for one, it was a $300 rate
Per day.
per day for 2 days of work. And it was a lot of script. And I was like, yep, this is in my wheelhouse. It's something I'm good at. I can do this. And so my agent reached out and asked for the agency fee. And I got a cut and paste response, cut in space, because I went back and saw other emails from this casting director. Word for word, said the exact same thing. I'm so sorry, but the budget on this one is too tight, and we're not going to be able to pay the 10% agency fee. $30. $30 a day for 2 days, $60 total. And, my manager reached back out and was like, hey, this is actually below his daily minimum. We're willing to do it, just to add the 10%. And they wouldn't do it. And I said no. So they didn't get me. I didn't get to do the job. And I wasn't worth $60. That's what it came down to. And in that same production, because I knew other people in it, some of the leads were getting paid. It was like advertised 800 or 900 a day, but they were getting paid 1500 a day. So, I understand you've got a budget, but you've decided this lead is now worth 1500 a day, which, some of the jobs, I'm not going to say they're not worth it. Especially with some of the people, they are worth it. But so is the rest of your cast. And
And hello, from
throw someone away
900
in
to
that.
1500, it's $600 more, and you can even get $60 for 2 days for agency fee. How ridiculous!
it's insulting. It's devaluing. And the thing is, for those of us that don't fall into the categories that are normally casting their leads, we already deal with enough devaluing because, especially in America, we exalt youth and we look down on age. And I can't figure it out. It's like becoming one of my driving forces in my writing and the other stuff, the way we use these things to devalue humans. And it's appalling. But it's what it is, that's the one that I usually use that and funny enough, I've flagged that casting director, and unless the project is just something that I'm going to pursue, I won't even submit to him. I'm just like, no, you literally threw me away for $60 and you gave me a cut and paste response and you responded so quickly. I know for a fact you didn't even talk to the client. If I don't know if you wanted me or if the client wanted me, but someone wanted me and you gatekept. You stood in the way of this happening just so you could look good to them saying, look how much money I saved you. I kept them from getting agency fees. Really? Really? It'd be nice. One, it'd be nice to have some people in our corner, but also I understand when it comes to like these really big companies and really big money, man, when it comes to that, we just don't matter,
Yeah, but that's so ridiculous. As I said, for example, the first verticals with a really great story, like The Double Life of My Billionaire Husband, who re hits a lot of millions of you. And you only get paid once for it before shooting with this condition, not even if it's really hitting and the company makes nearly billions out of it. They cannot give you a kind of, I don't know, after shooting money or stuff like that when it hits very well.
Yeah, that'd be residuals. That's how the traditional market went. But with new media, with these kind of things, it's just not the way. And honestly, it's non-union. Screen Actors Guild has come up with a contract. I'll be honest, I haven't read it yet, but I need to. I want to because I've been on the cusp of joining Screen Actors Guild for years. I just every time that I was about to join, some other aspect of my career took off that was in the non-union realm, and I'm like, oh crap. Okay, let's explore this for a little bit first, and then go from there. And just kind of clarify, I don't think anyone should be making less money. I like our leads, the amount of work that are put on them is unfathomable. What in traditional filming would have been over the course of anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks, they're cramming in, 8 days. The amount of script they have to memorize, the amount of what they do, the choreography, the format, because it is different from horizontal filming. There's you're so restricted to this, very, stylized way. Their job is incredibly hard, but that's also the reason why you need to pay your supporting team better, because that takes some of the pressure off the leads so they can do a better job of their job when their supporting team is doing the actual job and supporting. So that's why, like for mine, I try to make sure that I'm always off book. I'm always prepared with, not just what they've asked, but a couple other options just in case, and I can work with my leads and really support their work, make them shine,
But I
or
think that's the
help them
same with the
reveal.
crew members. They should also get paid more. I spoke with Carrie Donovan. She's an intimacy coordinator. And she told me, for example, that intimacy coordinators don't get paid as much as a stunt coordinator gets. And they are doing the same job, but in different ways, one for
It
the
sort
stunts,
of
one for the intimacy scenes. Mostly, intimacy coordinator has more to do than a stunt coordinator.
It both realms have really struggled to get their validation from the industry. Like up until, I mean, there wasn't an Oscar for stunts. I think they just announced that they were going to have one, but we've been pushing for that for years, you know. And telling story through violence is an art form in itself. Empathy is brand new, vital, brand new. And what I will say about the vertical market is they have been outstanding in including intimacy coordinators in the process, even more so than traditional Hollywood. And I'm very proud of that. On a traditional Hollywood or a bigger film, it's not a great idea to have your stunt coordinator also be your intimacy coordinator because the two individual jobs are so complex on a larger film. They kind of need to be separate so they can combine and work together and once again support each other. On the verticals, it's not as much of an issue because it's so condensed. Actually, the one that I was talking about earlier, Forbidden Love with my young CEO, Selena was our intimacy and stunt coordinator on that. She was vital. That one, I mean, let me touch on that one just real quick because I think it'll highlight what we're doing. If you haven't seen it, please check it out. It's on NetShort. I will give it with a trigger warning. I came in as I much much more of a villain, but I wasn't the three-piece suit, frumpy looking kind of villain. Kind of look like I do now, to be honest. I was incredibly virile and I was savage, and I was playing Ashley's ex-husband. And when I first, just to be frank, when I first got the script and I read the scene, I was like, "Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I'm okay with this. This is really violent." And I read the story. I'm like, it does fit in, but it's going to depend. Are they going to just do it for gratuitous violence, or are they going to tell story through violence? And I was honestly about to turn the role down. I was playing Harlan, and Ashley reached out to me, and she's like, "Hey, Toby, I just talked to our director. He's incredible. Tell me, were you cast as Harlan?" I was like, "Well, they've offered the role. Wait, are you Renee?" She's like, "Yes." I'm like, "Oh shit. Okay, all right. I can do this now." I had a previous friendship with Ashley, and we'd worked together. I trust her. I trust her implicitly, and I also trust her to be very honest with me when she's comfortable, when she's not comfortable, when something works, when something doesn't. And for someone I'd never met before, that can be a little more challenging, especially on vertical sets. And I was like, I was worried about, what if I got someone really young? Oh God, okay. But we talked about it, and I'm like, "Ashley, if you're in, I'm in." That's and then it came the other the other thing that's inside me where I was like, "Okay, if I turn this down, I don't know who they're going to get to play opposite of Ashley. It could be someone better than me. It could
You want to
outright be
be
someone
a
better."
bit out protective for Ashley also.
Yep, but it could also be someone who's not, and I felt responsible. Selena, the entity coordinator, had a conversation, a three-way conversation with the two of us, and we discussed it and where we wanted to go and what we were thinking. And it turned out we were all on the same page. Selena had an incredible theatrical background, and so we communicated a whole lot on that. And one of the opening scenes that I'm in, we actually shot on the final day because it was so violent. But basically, I'm her ex-husband, and I've broken into her apartment, and she comes home to find me there and the place ransacked. And so, as opposed to just being what you see in like typical verticals, like, "You did this, slap. You did that, ha ha. You're a bitch, ha ha." That kind of fake macho super alpha bullshit. This ended up being very tender, very romantic. Let me not use the word romantic. Let's not use the word romantic. Very tender, and the violence came out of a reason. A relationship that didn't work, and one of the two couldn't deal with it. That was my character. So it's some of the more savage. It's one of the more savage scenes, but it's also it tells a story. I'm really proud of it. The way our cinematographer, God, he was incredible. And I'm blanking on his name right now. I'd love to prop his name. But he's British, and he made sure, like for the hero scenes, he shot on tripods so they were steady, they were solid. You could see what was going on. For our scenes with that, he took the camera off the tripod, and so it's a little shaky, it's a little unnerving. So even the story through the cinematography tells the story of unrest on the screen. So that when Tristan showed up as the hero and put the beat down on my character, it meant something. I, like I said, trigger warning because it is very violent, but please go out and check out Forbidden Love with the Young CEO and leave a comment or something.
Natural, it was a natural, right?
I think so. I think that's not sure. Yep. And one thing, if folks don't mind, because like we've discussed a little bit, like especially with supporting actors, any of the supporting actors you see that you like or make an impression, mention them, tag them. We never get mentioned, you know? Even just a small mention is incredible. And with that being said,
Aline from I Love Vertical spoke in one of our monthly recap. We every month all of us say who's the actor and the actress of the month. And she named one month a support actress as her actress of the month
That's incredible.
and told that or said that this supporting actress did an outstanding job and did better than the leads. And put them into the shadow. So she
Impossible, man.
named she or she named a support actor. And you know, the thing for me as an audience is I really love great supporting actors. Is a Bedas or in Werewolf Once or Good Friends or Assistants, something like that. I really like that. And I know exactly. It happens so often that I don't know who's playing the support role because I don't know the actors, you know? And so the credits is always a big theme to talk about, the missing credits. Even for the directors and all the crew members, they are missing for the audience. So for me, sometimes it's totally hard to say who was that actor or who was this actress and who directed it because it was really well produced and stuff like that. It's really hard with this shitty messing credits. But we spoke a lot what has changed, but what keeps you still so attracted doing verticals?
It's kind of a loaded question because I will be very, very truthful with you. Some of it is necessity. I'm an actor for a living. That's how I pay my rent. And right now, it's the main thing that's hiring. That's the business side of it. But the truth is, I'm also a storyteller, and I love being able to work with actors, directors, clients. I love doing this work. I love telling stories. And I've always approached the verticals. Well, like I said, when we first started, we didn't know what they were. They weren't even called verticals. I've always approached it as like this. The script will be as good as you make it. You will occasionally get scripts that are terrible, but every single playwright and screenwriter has got, drafts they've written that are awful. And before they get to revise and revise and revise, sometimes they, go to print. That's why you have the luxury of a rewriting process. And I do believe this, the good verticals work with their actors. They hire top quality actors and work with them to take something that may not be, finished yet, or a script, and be like, hey, this is what's going on. What do you say we twist it this way? What do you say we twist it that way? What do you give your actors a little leeway? And once again, on I go back to the one with Ashley. Opening scene started off as being something stereotypical, very stereotypical. She comes in, there's alcohol bottles everywhere, and Harlan is drunk. And I talked to the director, Eric Schwager, Eric Schwager. Incredible director, fantastic director. I was like, hey, I got a thought. Do you mind if I share it with you? He goes, yeah, sure, go ahead. What are you thinking? I'm like, what if he's not drunk? He goes, what do you mean? I'm like, what if he's not drunk? The scene is she comes home, the place is destroyed, he's drunk and attacks her. What if he's sober? What if he's sitting there eating cereal, just as mundane as possible? So this is no longer just drunken and gratuitous. This is intentional. And he's like, oh shit, that gave me chills. I'm like, and then he's like, okay, we need 10 more minutes. This is what I need. And we actually cleared some of the alcohol bottles away and gave Harlan, we didn't have cereal on set. So it's like actually a bowl of nuts. But he's like, he's just going to be sitting there. He's just going to be casually eating something sober. And then the scene goes from there. And there's a chilling aspect to that, but that's storytelling. But that's also when you get a group of professionals together and you build something together. So you're not just cranking out schlock.
Yeah, the creativity.
I remember us being able to do some of that on Faded. I remember that on Billionaire. There's been several that I've been on where I've had these wonderful, wonderful freaking directors. They're like, hey, this is what we've got. Something doesn't quite feel right. Can you give me something? Yeah, I got you. I got you. And we work it together. And
Teamwork
that's
makes the
what keeps me
dream
coming
work,
back.
huh?
Yeah, it does. It does. And that's what keeps me coming back, getting to work with these artists.
Do you miss your stunt show times?
Yeah. I can't lie about that. I miss it.
Would it be possible to do that again? Sorry for asking at your age.
Yeah. Yep. And it's kind of funny because you're looking at a different, oh my God, a different world altogether, where once again you do have a lot of the young ones coming up. Some of them respect the folks who've been doing it for a while. Some of them have yet to learn how to respect them, and I get it because I was young too, and I was excited. I was going to get into it. I was going to do it. There are certain things I won't do. Oh, I'm not able to do, flatly, but I won't do again. I'm not what they call a tricker. So I don't do a lot of parkour. I don't do a lot of, flipping, tumbling. I do tumble, but I don't do the wild tricks. I'm not going to be a tricker. But I can tell a story through violence. I can tell a story through combat because that's also one of my careers. I've been a fight coordinator for years and years and years. Oddly enough, the vertical industry uses me to stage my own fights oftentimes, but they have yet to hire me to coordinate one of their verticals, which is something that I am trying to do. And I did notice that one company, specifically when I'm there, the fight coordinator will be on set every day except the days I'm there. And I'm like, guys, really? No. I know what you're
Would
doing.
it be possible to you for you to do a stunt coordinator on a vertical set?
Oh God, yeah. And I'd love to. For the one, there have been a few that I've been in where they're like, "Yeah, we don't have a coordinator today." I'm like, "Do you want me to take care of it?" Because you fall into this category. I don't want anyone to get hurt on set.
Yes.
That's what kind of takes it over. But in the same respect, by doing what I'm doing, I am slighting those professionals that have worked their life to build a stunt career as a coordinator, and I don't want to do that. I have
Yes.
loyalty to my team, my people. So I don't want to take any opportunities away from them, but we're on set, we're about to shoot, and I'm watching something that is dangerous happen. Or I've been asked to do something like, well, yeah, I can do that, but you're supposed to have a coordinator here. Okay, all right. I will do the job to keep people safe, but
Normally, it's not my job.
it's weird because it makes you feel like a scab, and that's not good. That's not good. I mean, part of the reason why, hopefully, if I do get to grow in my career as an actor into not just verticals but into film and TV, that's the reason why I want a stunt double. Not because I'm so important. No, because these are the people that are trained to do this. They're good. And by doing it myself, even though I can, I'm taking jobs away. I'm taking food off the table of a tradesman, of a craftsman. And I don't want to do that. I want to spread the love, not hoard it.
Yeah, that's good.
But yeah, I miss tumbling. I miss the rough and tumble. I miss sword play. I miss, running across stage and making people freak out. I joke around about the old
A
guy
lot
still
of
has it.
small kids, aren't it? When their young boys say, "Yeah, he does it. Yeah, did you see it?" Because I've three good children, two boys. with 10 and 14 years old, and they are so fucking freaking out when they're seeing
Oh,
such
yeah.
scenes. Oh, did you see that? Did you see that? Yeah.
I still got it. Trust me, I still got it. It's just a matter of convincing those that'll hire you that you do, you know.
Yeah, I understand. Wow. What last question before I'm doing a five question quickie with you. What do you think will change or improve in the vertical industry in the next year?
Ooh, that sky's the limit, to be honest. Finally, this year we've gotten recognition as a legitimate format, a legitimate
Yes.
form of entertainment. There have been some major industry professionals that have not just done lip service, but put the money where the mouth is and sunk some stuff into it. I'm so excited about some of these platforms. I'm watching Fairflow because some really good people are working with that one. I'm really watching Gamatime. Gamatime is the brainchild of Bill Block, and I worked for Bill Block at Miramax. Well, when I was doing health and safety, I was specifically assigned to Miramax.
Okay.
I was their director of production health and safety for a solid year during the pandemic. So I did five films for them. That's actually where I was in Turkey. I did a Guy
Okay.
Ritchie film in Turkey, in Antalya, in Doha. I did two films up in Boston, one in Ogden, Utah, and one in Los Angeles that I really believe is one of the precursors to the vertical market. I did a it was a remake of He's All That called She's All That. But if you notice it, all the stars in She's All That, they were all TikTok stars. And it turned out that TikTok had funded most of this. And they brought in an incredible director, Mark Waters, and he is a phenomenal director of young talent. And I'm watching him work and I'm watching them work. I'm like, these guys are good. This, I can see where this could go. So you flash forward about 3 years to the emergence of the vertical world. I'm like, well, this makes sense. You know, they were already experimenting with regular Hollywood. Now they just turned Hollywood on its side, and created this market. But Gamma Time with Bill Block, they've got some solid script writers, good team. They're the ones when I see them in the breakdowns, I'm like, they're pro. And it goes back to this. Whenever I see their listings, they'll list the rate, and then they'll also up front plus this for agency fee. And I can't lie, whenever I see a posting for a vertical that says this is your rate plus agency fee if applicable, I instantly believe that they're more professional than others, because that's, you know, that means you're going to take care of your team. That could just be me being, you know, actor and selfish. I don't know, but you know, when I see that's a mark of professionalism that I admire. And I can't lie. So we've got a SAG contract that's out. We'll see how many of the verticals pick up on that. I can see it. Let's see here. I can see it growing so that more mainstream actors are bridging over into them. I can see potentially some larger budgets, but even with larger budgets, that doesn't quite fit with the financial model. Financial model is it's basically $300,000 or less, and you might have a few blockbusters or what they try to make as blockbusters, but what I think will happen is they'll develop certain films based on personality names. Like if Casey Esser is in one, there's a good chance a lot of people are going to watch it because Casey's in it. If Richard Serra is in one, you're probably going to watch it because Richard has that tentpole value. And a few others, you know, if you see them, oh God, I got to go watch this because so and so's in it. What I can see is there will be more releases to platforms that will also have a screening in theaters. Because some of the verticals are shot in a manner where you could do it both vertical and horizontal. So with that one, that'd be easy to just put the horizontal on the big screen. But I can see, especially more of the community of the vertical community getting together and going to sit down to Gorman's Chinese Theater or I think the Egyptian's closing, but one of those big big famous theaters, so they can have almost like a convention and community while they're watching it on a screen, but it still be in the vertical format, just on a big screen. So I can see that happening, and I think that would bridge it into what we call traditional media or traditional entertainment.
What this world also needs a bit to improve.
What it needs to improve, I'm going to harp on this, more representation, more strong female representation, more strong POC representation, more age representation.
Oh,
And
yes.
that's not just because, hey, I need to pay my rent. That's, we have
No,
value.
I know what you mean. That's I discussed this with a lot of as Karen Smolinski and with Tina and Brooke also, for example. Yeah, I totally understand that. We will see what the next new year will bring for this vertical space. I think we are just at the beginning of this vertical space. There will be a lot going on in the next years. I think so. I
I
think
hope
so.
so.
Because Europe is not really developed as a vertical market. They shoot here
Not.
in Turkey and stuff like that, but for example, here in Germany, verticals are not very common at the moment. A lot of people don't know what they are even are.
Well, here's a question for you that you would know better than I would, because I've always kind of grown up. I've been in America for so long. For the last 10 years or more, we have raised our children on iPads and phones. That's how they consume media. That's why the vertical market, I believe that's why they're more used to grabbing their phone and watching a movie than they are going to a theater now. In Europe, has it been the same way? Has there been a reliance on mobile technology for.
Yeah, when I see, for example, like my good, I don't have kids, but my good children, and I'm a lecturer at the university. So I have a lot of students, and I'm doing this job since nearly 15 years now. So I have a lot of students coming and going. And in this space, you can see in the lecturers, all of the students already have iPads and they are doing, no one writes down in a notepad or stuff like that anymore. And it's exactly the same thing here also in school. They get really early connected to this iPad stuff and stuff like that. But, and that's, I think that's the point why verticals are not so very common here in Germany at the moment. The Germans, for example, are really structured and organize new things need time to get here that the Germans trust this stuff. You know what I mean? It's kind of same with Netflix. When Netflix came over, it was so what streaming is this serious streaming? I don't know. It's now more common, but for me, for example, I don't even have a Netflix account till now. So I think there are a lot of iPads and smartphones also in these younger ages, but I think all these streaming platforms are not so common here than in the US, for example. Germany is not so that typical streaming country. Even
Gotcha.
not on smartphones or stuff like that. We use smartphones and iPads and all of that a lot, but not for streaming. For
Gotcha.
streaming, it's the classical horizontal TV.
Gotcha. Yeah, over here, even myself, if I don't have my smartphone, I'm kind of lost,
Yeah, I also use a lot of my smartphone, but watching stuff on a streaming. We mostly do on the television, and that
Okay,
means
makes sense.
horizontal. So I think that's the reason why verticals are not so common here.
Got to. It may just take a little time. And also they'll probably have to crack the formula of what stories do they want to see in Europe,
Yeah. And the next thing is, to be honest, I think the younger population is here not the target for verticals because
Yeah,
of
I
the
don't think so.
payments. Here, for example, here in Germany, a weekly membership is 25 euros. A weekly membership.
Oh, shit.
Yes. And that's a
Okay.
lot of money. And right at the moment, we are gaining more and more the problem with this whole amount of platforms. I'm having roundabout 51 platforms at my smartphone at the moment.
Oh, wow.
And I know people with even more. And if you have to pay for memberships, as I said, only that you can watch one, two, three shows, that's really expensive. I spoke to other fans in the US, in Australia, stuff like that. They are all memberships cheaper than here in Europe.
Wow. Okay.
So I
There's
think
got
that's kind of, if you are not a working person, I think you cannot afford really memberships for verticals at the moment here in Germany.
Makes sense.
So I think there it has to be a bit adjusted. For me, I would prefer having, let's say, 10 or 15 platforms where all the stuff is shown. But lately, I have the feeling that with every new show, a new platform drops.
It feels that way. A lot of people have jumped on the bandwagon, you know?
So that makes it more difficult to really watch. And I think that's the problem that he that's why here in Germany verticals are not so common at the moment. A lot of my friends of mine ask me, what are you doing now in your second podcast? What's this vertical? Is this vertical a film? No, it's not a film. It's a type of watching things. It's a streaming soap opera stuff like that. Ah, okay. Are there different shows? Yeah, there are different shows. And a lot of people at my age also, which should normally known about it, but it's not. I think Europe is, it's good for filming. They are producing in Lithuania, Italy, Great Britain, Istanbul already. There have been verticals produced, but the audience is not so big at the moment for these verticals here in Europe. And I'm sure if they will grow, there are a lot of more potential here. And I think it would be good for you as an actor because it's cheaper to produce verticals here in Europe. That's why they are flying over a lot of actors from the US to Europe and give them food, hotel, and shoot the verticals here. And for example, Candy Jar, this app, is based in Germany. But there haven't been shot verticals in Germany already. And I think that will improve in the next, let's say, 2 years. The European market is the market they should concentrate on because here is a lot of potential for this vertical
It's like
stuff.
an untapped market. So
Yeah,
yeah.
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yay.
And it's in the middle from the Chinese stuff and this middle culture countries.
It may take your local artists to develop the storylines that the people that they know so well want to see, and then the larger companies will come in and be like, "Okay, so you've done the work, you developed it. Let me fund you to produce that." So that may be the answer.
Danny Farber, for example, told me lately that Good Short shot now the first one in Turkey with Danny Farber. So
Nice.
I think they will hop on.
I hope so. There's I got to work with one of the production companies that was based out of Turkey, and I've worked with a few that were based out of the UK, and it's wonderful. It's incredible. And yes, their storytelling is different. Yes, their storytelling is unique, but that's what makes it so valuable,
And
you
that's
know.
what works. You need more platforms that take the risk to publish this kind of new stories. I think that's needed. I
Because
don't
usually
need
that's what happened.
20 more verticals with the typical trope shit. Sorry for saying that, but it
No,
is.
it's okay. We don't need 20 more of people standing around in a room shouting at each other. I don't
Yes.
believe you.
Yes. He's a fraud. No, he's not a fraud. And I'm always thinking, show them your damn ID and the problem is solved, please.
But I will say this on the actor side, because usually they have to have all of us there for more days of shooting. It's a good paycheck.
And you only have to stand there and do nothing.
Oh, that is the
Okay.
worst. Oh my God, standing around on those hard floors all day just shouting at each other. Oh, we yeah. Most of the women I know have they
High heels and stuff.
yeah, and they're like, okay, are my feet in the shot? Can you see my shoes? And they'll wear their tennis shoes or Crocs or something. And I'm just like, I wish I could. I'm over here in a pair of Doc Martens, with my ankles breaking. But that's when I looked around and see all the actors like, oh shit, we're all getting paid today. Oh, good, 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 good. Yeah,
I love this
yeah.
job. I love this job. I love this job. No, but
I
I
love it when
think,
my people get paid.
as
Yay.
I said, I think the European market will improve in the next 2, 3 years.
Yeah.
There is a lot of potential here.
So much good work comes out of Europe. So much really good work comes out of Europe. And I ain't gonna lie, I would love to be a part of it. I'm part of my if I was big enough to have contracts, part of my contract would be like, you know what? You can pay me a less of a rate if you just let me stay over there for a week, not on production, so
For
I can see.
holidays.
Yeah, so I can see the country, so I can go eat the
Yeah.
food, hear the music, meet the
And as I
people. Oh my
told you,
God.
it's not so far apart to visit more countries.
Oh my God, yes. Yeah, that's yeah. Oh my
That
God,
should be on your bucket
another
list for
one.
2026 or 2027,
You
Toby.
know what? You're right. It should. It should.
We will work on this, okay? I will check out what the German market. No, because I did also some acting stuff, I know a lot of production companies here in the South. And I have to ask them why they aren't shooting verticals
Yeah.
at the moment. As I
I'm a
said,
cheap date. I'm pretty good.
Candy Jar is based in Berlin.
I know that I've submitted to them, but I don't know that I've ever worked for them yet.
A
But yeah.
platform is here, but no shoot because we have so nice shooting locations, so nice areas to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to check that. Yeah.
That would be
That's on my
awesome.
bucket list for the next year. We'll see. So we have to do the 5 question quickie for the end.
Okay, I have a question for you. I do have a new one. This is the first one that I actually landed on the poster.
Hopefully not so AI shitted like.
It's not too bad, but I'm
Okay.
like,
Okay.
oh,
No,
they threw me out a
because
little
on
bit
some
there.
posters there's already the problem that they are so AI converted that you don't even recognize who's the actor
Yeah,
anymore.
yeah. They
That's
smoothed
really
me out a little
shit.
bit, but I'm okay.
Make
Yeah, you almost threw me out a little bit.
did they make you younger looking?
Not so much younger, but a little smoother.
That's good. That's always good. That's
I
good.
kind of got a little bit of a rough and tumble going on, you know?
AI is sometimes not so bad. Sometimes not so bad. So, no, but we can put this also in the credit when I'm doing the sneak peek with video
Okay.
with you for this episode. I always
Awesome.
put some shows in the sneak peek description and in the episode description. So,
Okay. I'll send
okay.
over the poster and touch through Instagram. That way you have.
That's totally fine. That's totally fine. So, 5 question quickie. What's your
Okay.
favorite dish? I always
Oh,
judge people by food. Sorry.
sushi. I am a fanatic for sushi.
Do you have good sushi corners around your place? Because not
Pretty
everyone
close
can
to
make great sushi.
Pretty close. I have a system where if I try a new place, I always get a simple tuna avocado roll because both the tuna and the avocado have to be incredibly fresh
Yeah,
for it to be
yeah.
good. So if a tuna avocado roll is good, chances are
The
the
whole
restaurant's
place
good.
is good. Okay,
Yep.
that's good. That's good. So, what kind of film do you love? What's your I learned from colleagues of yours that there is a so-called comfort movie. What's your comfort movie?
I have I call it a guilty pleasure movie.
A guilty
It's
pleasure movie.
considered,
Okay,
yes,
new
it is
learned.
considered one of the biggest flops in Hollywood history, and I
And that's your
love this film so much. I actually watched it about 2 nights ago again. So much to the point where in college I had this film memorized word for word, and it's a Bruce Willis Danny Aiello film called Hudson Hawk.
Hudson Hawk. I don't know this, but I love Bruce Willis, to be honest.
It's
He was
it was
such a
like
great actor.
it was somewhere in the 90s that they filmed it, so it looks a little dated, but it's ridiculous. It is
Hudson
funny.
Hawk. Okay.
Yep.
I have to watch this, I think, because I really like the movies from the 80s, 90s.
And
They are sometimes better produced than the newer ones with
yeah,
all the technical stuff.
true. I will tell you this about me, and this is a very telling thing about me. It's not a movie, but it's a TV show. My all-time biggest nerd thing, and I am a nerd. Oh my God, I am a nerd. I'd be curious to find out what it was called in other countries. In this country, it was called The Greatest American Hero.
The greatest American hero.
I used to
Okay.
watch it on Nick at Night as a kid, reruns from it, but it's from somewhere in the 80s. That hero, that encompasses everything. Outside of that, Doctor Who. Boom.
The greatest American hero. I have to take a look what it was in Germany, because it was surely also released in Germany. I
I
think
hope
so.
so. Yeah. It's ridiculous
I will
like
check that. I will check
that.
that. So, what kind of music do you listen to? What do you prefer? What puts you in a good mood?
Oh my God. Almost everything. I grew up in a radio station. I got
Oh
exposed
yeah,
to
that okay,
all
true.
kinds of music, and it depends. I'll throw in some show tunes. I loved going to I love going to redneck bars that do karaoke and singing Broadway show tunes.
Karaoke is so great. I love this. When I was studying, we had a karaoke bar near our living place, and every Tuesday was karaoke evening. I loved that.
Yep.
That was so fun. That was
As much as I
I
love
always sang
watching.
Bryan Adams.
Oh,
Heaven,
nice. Okay.
heaven.
Heaven.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that was my song.
My big one is from the musical Hedwig and the Angry Inch, The Origin of Love.
I don't know this song.
Oh, it's a
I don't.
brilliant, brilliant musical. Brilliant musical.
Huh. Yeah, but karaoke is really great. I love that.
I love as much like you'll see someone come up and you're like, oh my God, where did this voice come from? But even the people get up there that really can't sing, but they're just loving it, loving
It's
life,
so
and
fun. It's
it's
so
amazing.
fun.
It's incredible. Oh my God, yeah.
It's so fun. And I did with one of my, I lived with 12 men. When I was studying, 12 men and I. So every time I sang a duo with one of my guys, a love duo song, like Robin Williams and Nicole Kidman, something stupid to say that. Yeah, it was so fun. We sang and loved each other in the karaoke barn. It was so
That's
great.
awesome.
I missed this time, really. Yeah,
Yeah.
I totally understand karaoke is. So self-care moments. I love that. I really love
Yeah.
that. But you know what? What do you want to know? A fun fact.
Yes.
What rises up out of karaoke? I'm hosting in my garden. I'm having a 1,000 square feet garden here in my house. I'm hosting every year a garden concert. I have a
Nice.
project called Michaela Sound Garden.
Oh, that's incredible. That's amazing. It's like a almost like a well, you're planning it,
It's
but I was going to say like a pop-up concert.
an unplugged garden concert.
That's amazing.
It began with one of my roommates from studying, because he was playing guitar and I had singing lessons in the school area. And in the first Michaela's sound garden, he and I sang. We were the act, the show act. And I'm doing always a big finger food and stuff. And it's totally unplugged. Only a bit of equalizer that it's getting a bit sound and stuff like that. Microphone, guitar, so that was the first one. And it was my idea to do one because we want to do it. But my colleague was so smart, he wrote on the flyers volume one. And I already have volume 10 in my garden. And
That's incredible.
in the last years, it went so public on Instagram. I had once an artist from Canada who saw this in Instagram and said, "I want to play in your garden as well." And I said, "Okay, you can come." And he come over and he put a video on in his Instagram profile. And then a friend of him who lives in Ireland saw this and said, "I want to come to your sound garden. I will play next year." And then I had an artist from Ireland who sang some great Irish folk music, and then I had a duo from San Francisco, kind of blues and stuff. I had a band edition with two rock bands from Germany one year. And last year, I had a singer from England who was kind of jazz.
That's incredible.
And
Oh my God.
next year, it's the 10th episode. And we will see who will joins me for this. But it's so nice. Round about 100 people audience, finger food buffet, and all in my big garden.
That is amazing. Oh my
It's a garden
God.
concert. Yeah.
Like,
And
I want to
Danny
go.
Far
Oh my God.
Yeah, you can come over with Danny Farber because Danny Farber heard about it when I was recording with him and he said, oh, I want to play there, my
Oh
new
my God,
songs. And I
yes.
said, yeah, you can come over. And he's told me lately, because next year it's on the 4th of July. And he told me that he will check if he can do in Istanbul some vertical projects around that time. And then he will fly over because it's not so far from Turkey to here and will join my Soundgarden for
Oh my God,
playing.
that'd be amazing. Oh,
We
it's
will
stuff like
see.
that
We
I dream about.
will see.
Oh.
I will book the vertical stars as musicians in my garden for my project Michaela Soundgarden. I will send you a link to the profile where you can see how this always ends in my garden.
Here we
Because
go.
it's, I love this project.
We can connect a few of us together and we'll write a script, a karaoke vertical.
I would love to have
Think
with
about that.
music
Oh
in
my
it, with
God.
a sound, with a soundtrack
Create
later.
some original songs,
Yes, where you can buy
and
a soundtrack for this vertical.
yes, and even get a few of the stars, a few of us together, and actually get up there and sing, show off some of the other stuff that they may not know we do.
I will offer my garden as shooting location.
Hey,
You know,
we're
with the story like mine was. Mine was kind of sofa concert at my student with my student room and ended up in only project Michaela Soundgarden with 100 people audience and having a good time and making memories in my garden every year.
Oh, that's incredible. That'd be a great story. We wouldn't have to dump wine on anyone. We wouldn't have to slap anyone. We wouldn't have to.
No, nothing. Only music, good food, and a great time.
Yep, the
And
competition
I'm
being
sure
voices.
That would hit because
You know it
people
would.
will crave for kind of this story. It's more down to earth. We don't need a billionaire. You know what I mean? We don't need a hidden identity. We don't need a banquet scene, an heiress, and whatever. We need just normal people who wants to do what they love and make a story out of it.
Bring
Kind
a
of
great
rom-com
story.
in it. We are totally fine.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things I'm looking to connect with some of the artists that would like to create some of our own work. Some of it is just cathartic, just for us. But also, like, yeah, let's see if we can bring some new stories. I mean, I've been a script doctor for years. I would love to collaborate with people. I'd love to.
Yeah,
We all
so
get
we
so busy.
agree we need new storylines in 2026. And as I said, I will offer you great shooting locations here in Germany to do that.
Oh my God, that'd be a dream come true.
And
Yay!
then you can check it on your bucket list visiting Germany because then it's yay! Two birds with one stone. Job
Exactly.
working and Germany visiting, huh?
Oh my God, yes.
Toby, we should stay in contact for that. Because it's
Yeah.
not so impossible to do that.
It's not impossible at all. We only get
You
one trip around this life, so might as well enjoy it while we
have to
can.
believe, you have to dream. Only then it can come true. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
Yay.
Yeah. So, Toby, we stay in contact. I thank you so much for your time, for doing this
Thank
episode with
you.
me. It was such a
Yay.
pleasure talking to you.
You as well.
And
This was really fun.
yeah, absolutely. With a great new plans.
All right.
I should keep noticing all of them because Kirby wants to join filming in Europe also because he has never been here in Europe for shooting verticals, and she wants to do a criminal series vertical in different countries, every time a new case as a criminal detective or stuff like that. So we can do also one in Germany. Yeah. As I said, the market is big. Let's evaluate the market in the future, and then we will find a solution for all these bucket list points.
Go forward, tell good stories, be good people. Yay!
That's a good ending for this episode. Toby, thank you very much. Sending lovely
Thank you.
greetings to the US. And I'm
And
sure we will talk again.
same to you. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.
This is a wrap on this episode, and I hope you tune in again.